Penguin Random House Audio presents Grasp, The Science of Transforming How We Learn by Sanjay Sarma with Luke Yoquinto. Read for you by Neil Shah. SS to Gitanjali and Tara. LY to Kelsey and Hope. In memory of Woody Flowers. Introduction. The adventure begins. Learning is an adventure. And as anyone who survived an adventure will tell you, that's not always a good thing. It can be a long, rewarding process that changes the way you experience the world and reveals capabilities you never knew you had. But in the retelling, adventures are extolled only by the victors. For every adventurer who's slain an educational dragon, there may be dozens lying in caves and ditches nearby, smoldering in their armor, rueing the day they made their attempt. My closest scrape with outrageous educational misfortune came at the Indian Institute of Technology, Kanpur. The moment stands out in my memory with uncanny clarity, as though it had been filmed at double the standard frame rate, as in Peter Jackson's somehow too vivid Hobbit movies. It happened my final year at university. Actually, to be technical, it was the summer after my final year. Although I had entered university firing on all cylinders, at some point my straight A's gave way to curvier letters. And finally, just before what should have been my graduation, I managed to flunk controls, a course required for my engineering degree. That meant summer school, one chance at redemption. In most of India, summer means the monsoon season. In Kanpur, it's wetter than it is hot, and it is as hot as anywhere I've ever lived. The dormitories weren't air-conditioned, but the rooms did have French doors that opened onto a small terrace, and so, like every other sucker lucky enough to be taking remedial summer courses, I pushed my bed close to the French doors, so that at least my upper half could enjoy the occasional breeze. My worldly goods, my trunk of clothing, books, a stash of sweets I'd brought from home, went at my feet at the other end of the room. One morning, I woke up at 8 or so, bleary-eyed. Something was amiss. Or rather, something was looking at me. Something with an impressive set of teeth. I don't know if you've ever experienced the rapid transition from drowsiness to abject terror, but I don't recommend it. Every part of my body froze except my eyeballs, which swiveled on their bearings to take in my visitor. Staring back, fangs bared, was a rhesus macaque. Too late, I realized my error. I had situated myself between my stash of sweets and any passing hungry simians. Monkeys, in my opinion, are cute only on the other side of a television screen. They can be mischievous in all the worst ways, even violent, and they sometimes carry rabies. We stayed like that, face to face, for what felt like minutes. I pictured my obituary, once promising student, mauled at summer school. 5 years earlier in high school, no one who knew me would have predicted such an ignominious fate. Together with about 70,000 of my peers, the comparable number today is on the order of 1 million, I had sat for the Indian Institutes of Technology's entrance exam. It was, and remains, perhaps the most competitive exam in the world. With some variation by year, only the top 2% of test takers are accepted to any of IIT's campuses, which means for every 50 would-be dragon slayers, only one prevails. When my cohort scores came in, I learned that I had placed among the top 500 students in the country. The news came as a major relief. Though I had won the neonatal lottery in the sense that I had been born to educated parents who prized learning and independent thought, we were far from wealthy, and they had made it clear to me that if I were ever going to make something of myself, academic excellence would be non-negotiable. After I saw my name on that board, it seemed my adventure was off to a promising start. But at some point at university, the going became a slog. It became difficult to figure out how and why the abstract coursework I was supposed to be learning mattered in the larger scheme of things. It wasn't my professor's fault. I was being taught by some of the better professors in India, and plenty of other students were doing just fine. And it wasn't that I didn't want to care about the material. I wished desperately, in fact, for the stuff I was being taught to fit into my head as effortlessly as it had in my childhood. But instead, for the first time in my life, learning had become difficult. In a way, I almost envied the monkey slavering at the end of my bed. All he had to do was wander along the row of dormitory windows and take whatever food was on offer. To him, my university was a buffet, filled with treats just waiting to be discovered. It should have been that way for me as well. I could see some of my friends partaking in the spread of knowledge, but I couldn't force myself to eat. In a very real sense, the monkey was better adapted to my university than I was. Today, more than 30 years later, I'm happy to report I survived the most dangerous part of my educational adventure. The macaque at the end of my bed scampered away, permitting me to spend the rest of the summer forcing down the curriculum of my controls course and reading J.R.R. Tolkien's entire Lord of the Rings cycle. If I hadn't been given that second crack at that course, however, or if something else should have come between me and my studies that summer, I shudder to think about the later educational journeys I would have missed out on. Instead, today I find myself in a unique position, not just engaged in my own lifelong pursuit of knowledge, but also the lead guide for many others. I head the open learning effort at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where it's my job to fling open the doors of the MIT educational experience and extend aspects of it to as many people as might conceivably benefit. My quest is hardly unprecedented. Many others across time and space have made similarly ambitious attempts. Geniuses, visionaries, disciplinarians, anti-disciplinarians, administrators, philosophers, gurus, literal saints, such as Saint Jean-Baptiste de La Salle, who dedicated his life to educating poor children in France, and, in 1685, established what was likely Europe's first teacher training school. Some failed, some succeeded with certain types of students in certain conditions, and some saw their ideas spread nearly worldwide, only to recede. And so it would not be unreasonable to wonder what I, and the groups that I represent, bring to the equation that is so new and different. It can't be just my experience as an educator, although, if I may be so immodest, I am a good one. And it can't come down just to the transformative new education technologies being created at MIT and elsewhere. After all, would-be reformers have overhyped education tech for well over a century. To William Rainey Harper, who taught Hebrew at Yale University in the late 1800s, the transformative technology was the United States Postal Service, which he claimed would facilitate correspondence coursework greater in amount than that done in the classrooms of our academies and colleges. In 1913, Thomas Edison voiced similarly high hopes for the motion picture, which he thought would render textbooks obsolete. Next came radio, which was supposed to become as common in the classroom as the blackboard. Then television, which 1950s-era technophiles referred to as the 21-inch classroom. In 1961, popular science predicted that by 1965, half of students would rely on automatic teaching machines for their instructional needs. By the 1970s and 1980s, computers had become the new top contender. And indeed, although they did soon become a significant part of every child's life, as the MIT educational technology pioneer Seymour Papert foresaw in 1980, they have yet to live up to his 1984 prediction that the computer will blow up the school. Far from it. Despite the onrush of technological changes that have come to education since the middle of the 19th century, most of us still teach and learn in classrooms that remain remarkably similar to those of 150 years ago. And so, when I ponder what education could become, I find my thoughts wandering less to hypothetical technological futures than to my own past, to my university dormitory and that monkey, for whom the physical architecture of standardized education...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?